Hey everyone, welcome to our podcast. It's a Thomas Thing. I'm Ben.
And I'm Tim. And we're the Thomas Brothers.
This is our little corner of the podcast universe where we get to share with you some of our favorite things through conversation. We're excited to bring you along as we talk about our lives and our passions. Thanks for listening.
Welcome back, everybody.
Welcome back. We finally made it to episode 2. It's only been like 2 weeks.
Has it been 2 weeks? I thought it was like 3. I don't know. Everything's kind of all over the place.
Yeah, it's been busy. This has been a very long week for me. I'm not sure why either. It was a very long week. Thursday, I thought it was Friday, and it turned out not to be Friday. So at the end of Thursday, I was like, fuck, I have to do Friday over again. Yeah, it was a long week. But here we are, back at it. I think since the last one, you did actually go to the chili cook-off?
Yeah. Yeah, that was it was a little bit of a clusterfuck, but yeah.
That was like the day after.
Yeah, it was.
Why was it a clusterfuck? What happened?
There's just a ton of people up in Virginia City, and Virginia City's not very large. And the wife was at work, and it was just me and the kids.
Ah.
And got one kid wants to go one direction, one kid wants to go the other direction, and I just wanted to eat food. So.
Yeah. You said she was working?
Yeah.
Ah. Well, that sucks that she missed out on that.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Where is Virginia City?
It's like dead center between my house and Reno. But you have to drive up like a super windy road. So you remember hitting like 6 Mile right before you turned to my old house? Pretty much you just keep taking that road into the mountain. And then...
Is that where the wild horses were?
Trying to remember. Like, you remember where Maverick is? The gas station?
Vaguely.
So you got like the main highway, and then you turn left at the Maverick gas station, and then you go straight up that road, and then the next like main highway looking road was 6 Mile, and then you cross over 6 Mile into like that neighborhood, and that was my old house.
Yeah, I don't remember at all.
Well, basically.
But I believe you.
It was like 10 minutes, 10 to 15 minutes, depending on who's in front of you. Then super windy road, and then you're in Virginia City.
Got it.
And then you take another like 20 minutes past that, and then you're in Reno.
Yeah, whichever direction we came from, I think we came down from Lake Tahoe.
Yeah, because I knew you guys took a super windy road.
I don't know, some backwoods road. And there was wild horses everywhere. It was an experience.
Well, I mean, pretty much everything out here is backwoods.
We were really out here in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, not anymore. Now they're like building shit up. We have a McDonald's now.
Oh, man.
I'm fucking miserable, bro. I came out here to get away from people.
The gentrification has started.
Yeah, and they're building a like a mini mall. But not a lot of people know that it's a mini mall yet. But I have friends that work in like the state construction portion. I don't know what the fuck it's called. But like the engineer department. And yeah, they're telling me that it's going to be a mini mall. And I'm like, oh, great. So we're just going to be bringing a shit ton of people out here. And it's going to attract a lot more, as stupid as it sounds, people my age.
Oh.
Yeah, I hate it.
Troublemakers.
Yeah, exactly.
What the hell is a mini mall? Does that mean they have an Auntie Annie's but not a Sbarro?
You're talking about like the pretzel place.
Yeah, I was like, do they have a Wetzel's but not a hot dog on a stick?
Well, no, like a mini mall, an outdoor mall, if you will. So it's probably going to be like a Ross or a Bed Bath & Beyond, and then some little like fast food joint, and then probably some kind of makeup store or some shit, like along those lines. Like, do you remember like where In-N-Out was in Carson?
Nope.
God damn it.
Sorry, bro.
Yeah, I mean, it's essentially just like similar stores that you would see in a normal mall, but they are their own individual buildings. And for the most part,
so like a strip mall.
There we go. Yeah.
All right.
Mini mall, outdoor mall, strip mall.
No, I'm tracking.
All mean the exact same thing.
Yeah. I just thought this was like a very tiny mall.
No. I mean, I feel like that's what it is, but, you know.
Yeah, it is what it is.
So, yeah, basically just going to be swapping out all the elderly for youngins, and I'm not about that. I appreciate that I live around a lot of elder people. I enjoy it. It's fucking quiet.
I mean, eventually you will be an elder people.
Goddamn right. I'm trying to get there.
So will all the youngsters moving in.
Yeah, but that's like 30 years from now, bro. That's a long time.
You're at the beginning of that new wave.
Not a fan.
Not a fan.
That's why I will not go back to California, because no matter what, it's always young people, and it doesn't make any sense to me. No one fucking grows up.
Yeah, I mean, they come out here for opportunity.
I'm sure it's all part of the appeal, but nah, I'm an old soul, man.
You gotta move to like South Carolina or something.
I mean, it's probably gonna be the goal. Minnesota, Montana. I don't know about South Carolina. It's kind of humid there. Maybe North Carolina.
It was pretty humid here today.
Yuck.
Yeah.
Did it just rain or something?
No, that we haven't seen rain in like 3 years. No, I'm kidding. It's the California drought, man.
Yeah.
That drought, we haven't seen rain. But
yeah,
we get the June gloom fog.
June gloom fog. I am unfamiliar, although I also didn't live on the coast when I lived there. So
I'm low-key just making that up. Sam had mentioned it today that, yeah, it's June gloom. And I was like, maybe this is what they mean by that. This month specifically, like even starting just a week ago, I drive up the coast every day to work. And every single day, it's just super dense fog rolling in.
Hmm.
And it usually isn't. It's usually either super clear or a little cloudy. But now it's like where you can, as you're driving through it, you see it moving with the cars.
That's weird.
Oh, it's pretty cool.
Didn't Orange County deal with that like 10 years ago?
I have no idea.
I remember them getting like completely fogged out. There was like some weird like low altitude clouds that were just kind of creeping through.
Yeah, I don't remember any sort of event like that.
Actually, it's probably more than 10 years ago. I don't know.
Who knows?
It's been a long time.
All I know is we get in that fog now in the evenings and in the early mornings. But when I drive home, I have literally ocean on the right, like inches from the road, and mountains on the left. And I can barely see the waves crashing into the side of the road on the right, when usually I can see all the way out to the islands.
It's crazy.
And then the mountains on the left have that like misty, smoky, foggy look. It's pretty badass. I wish I could get a picture of it, but when I try on my phone, it doesn't come out the way that you see it in person.
Yeah.
It never does. And like every day I'm like, oh, I should send the group chat a picture of the water, because I'm right, literally right next to it. And yeah, it just doesn't look right in the picture. It's hard to describe why it doesn't come out right. It must be either a parallaxing thing or just like the way the lens has a different view than the way your eyes see it.
Mm-hmm.
But I get to see the ocean every single day. Sometimes I see dolphins. I see a lot of oil rigs out there, sailboats. Sometimes when I'm a little closer to work, I see the cruise ships out there. They're fucking huge, man.
Yeah.
It's kind of remarkable. I know I get all wild about ships. I'm just obsessed with ships. But yeah, seeing the cruise ships, and then you're driving by apartments, and then you realize that the cruise ship that is several miles out into the water is still bigger than the apartments you're driving right next to. It's kind of mind-blowing.
Yeah, we're trying to figure out a way to go on a vacation on a cruise ship at some point, just to check it out.
So from what I've heard, it's the way to go, man.
Yeah, as expensive as they are, it's still not like ridiculous, because your food's paid for, your room is paid for, activities are all paid for. There's shit for the kids, there's shit for the adults, there's daycares that are set up in there so that mom and dad can go, you know, have a date that they haven't had in the past 10 years, you know?
Yeah. No, that's pretty cool, though. I definitely want to go on a cruise.
I mean, I'm not going on like the Virgin one. Hard pass on that. There's a reason that they're cheap. those are like $500 a week. And it's like, the math here, that sounds a little fishy.
No pun intended.
I've only heard horror stories from like Virgin Airlines about how shitty everyone treats the customers and this, that, and the third. And it's like, no, I'm not trying to be stuck on a boat in the middle of the ocean and have a bunch of cranky workers. I'm not bougie, but like if I'm on vacation, I want to be left alone.
I've heard good things about Carnival, but I've also heard nightmares.
Yeah. What's the other? Princess?
Is
that the other like really big one?
I don't know if that's a company or if that's the name of one of Carnival's ships.
That's a good question. Definitely not going to do Disney. Way too many fucking children.
I was not expecting that. Have you seen Disney's ship though? They have a pretty new one that came out recently, and it looks exactly like a Titanic, which is probably not good, but it looks incredible. Like it doesn't look like a cruise ship. It looks like a real ship.
Oh, damn.
It's absolutely gorgeous. Like if there was anyone that I want to go on, it's that one. Just because the ship itself looks so sick.
Damn, dude, this thing has a fucking water park on top of it. Two water parks, actually. Three pools. And that's on top of it. Who knows what's inside of it.
And Disney is known for having good food.
Overpriced, but good.
Yeah.
But I mean, yeah, just like everything else with Disney, how expensive is it to actually be on one of those boats? Oh, it's called the Disney Wish.
Ooh.
Fancy.
I'm sure it's probably extremely expensive.
Yeah. Now I'm curious. Fuck. Here we go.
Yeah, here we go. Rabbit hole.
Ride this tangent. 200 to 250 per person per day.
Yikes.
I mean, that's not that bad. Well, then again, the other one that we were looking at was like 1500 for 2 weeks. And it stops on multiple islands of Florida. Or not Florida. Jesus. Hawaii.
I was like, multiple islands of Florida, huh?
Oh, Cuba? How much is a Disney cruise for a family of four? In general, you can expect to pay anywhere from $2,500 to $7,500 for a 3 to 8 night Disney cruise vacation for a family of four.
Jesus. Yeah, that's way too much.
Bonkers, man.
Way too much. I need a fifth job for that.
Yeah. And like three questions down in the FAQ, why are Disney cruises so expensive? I don't know.
Probably because they're a once-in-a-lifetime experience. You know it's going to be fucking awesome.
So what it's saying, Royal Caribbean has about 25 ships, so they don't have to charge like super crazy amounts because they're going to get their money one way or another. Disney only has four, with two more coming soon.
So hyper-limited availability.
Yeah. And also some of the Disney cruise ships are smaller, meaning there's a great demand for Disney cruises, which drives prices up. Is Disney cruise worth the money?
Is this on Disney's own website?
No, it's Family Vacation Design.
Oh, okay. That would have been really funny if that was one of the questions on Disney's own website. Is it worth the money? Why, of course it is. Gosh, Mickey.
Yep, fucking right there. If you cruise during a peak holiday period, you can feel overwhelmed by kids running amok.
Kids running amok.
Yeah.
Damn, now that's a disclaimer.
Oh, it says this is less likely to occur on a smaller Disney cruise ship. Huh, that's interesting. More premium experience with slightly more intimate feel. Ooh. Especially on the smaller Disney cruise ships. Fuck, man, I don't know.
I want to be on the big ship, though. I want to be on that big, big, beautiful Wish. That's pretty funny.
Oh, yeah, I mean, they do have, like, the... Fuck, I'm so torn. It's like the 4-night Bahamas Halloween cruise from Miami on Disney Magic. Like, you know the shit's going to be fucking popping.
Yeah.
Because it's Disney. But at the same time, it's fucking Disney, bro. Like, I feel like this is so many uppity people that are going to be on that because the price alone.
You at least get to build a lightsaber on there?
No.
That's what I want to do.
Ooh, speaking of which, I meant to send you a TikTok about that. This chick who makes a million different videos of her doing whatever lightsaber tricks and whatnot, showed two different lightsabers. One was from Disney and the other one was from some other like big name company. And she was just talking mad shit about the Disney one.
Really?
Yeah. But there's also like the experience of being able to like,
yeah, I was gonna say,
select your crystal and building it, and like everyone's doing it at the exact same time kind of thing. Like, oh, we're all fucking Jedi now, instead of, oh cool, my Amazon box is here.
Some of the videos I've seen, like, they really immerse you in it.
Yeah.
It's more than just the toy that you get at the end.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think anybody's walking away from that going, wow, I got this super authentic, like, all metal lightsaber. Like, no, you can see from the videos, they're all plastic. It's cheap.
Yeah.
But it's the experience of picking all the parts. And obviously, I haven't done it, so I don't really know what all the experience is. But, like, from what I've seen, it looks really fucking cool. Like, they turn the lights out, and then everyone holds up their newly built lightsaber, and the shit just looks sick.
Yeah.
I definitely want to do that. That's, like, on my bucket list.
Yeah, it's much better now than it used to be, because I went to Disneyland, I don't know, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, and pretty much, like, all those parts to build your lightsaber were just in, like, whatever shelf-like bins.
Mm.
And then you just kind of dig around and find what you want.
Got it.
They're, like, it's, I want to say it's, like, on a conveyor belt kind of thing, like,
it's a little bit more curated now.
Yeah.
I don't even think Galaxy's Edge was fully built out 3 years ago.
No, it wasn't. It was just all fenced off, like, coming soon. And me and my brother-in-law were both like, oh, man, I want to check this shit out. That looks really cool. One day.
Yeah, one day. It's definitely on my priorities list. Like, I'm not much of a Disneyland person. Like, at all, but at least one time, I do want to see that.
Yeah. I mean, it's a place, like, you gotta have a plan. You also need, like, the most authentic dad shoes of all time, because you're walking 7 miles a day.
Oh, yeah. No, that's something you go buy a pair of New Balance for that. And I think, ideally, you want to get, like, a weekend pass, so you can go for Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Take your time, have a plan for each day, go see specific shit, specific shows. I've also heard that right at sunset is when you want to go to, I want to say it's in California Adventure, you want to go to Cars Land?
I'm trying to remember.
Right at sunset, you see Cars Land the way the designer intended it to be seen. Like, it's pulled straight from the movie. Whenever it's like the golden hour, it's like where the sky is mostly orange.
Mm-hmm.
So definitely want to see that. And of course, everything Star Wars related, all the other Disney stuff. I saw it as a kid and I'm good. No need to repeat that.
How many times did we go to Disney as kids? Cause I know Knott's Berry Farm was like the main like go to.
We maybe went to Disneyland at least 10 different times.
Yeah, I don't remember that at all. I remember going like once.
I may have gone a few more times than you when I was younger.
Yeah, I mean, the only time that I remember doing it was when we had whatever, like, silhouettes done, like the little painting, and I think...
Oh, where they cut it out of paper? It's like black construction paper?
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe it was felt. It doesn't really matter. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. I think I was Peter Pan or some shit.
Mm-hmm. I do remember that.
That's it. That's all I fucking remember about that place.
Maybe it wasn't 10 times. That's probably a little much. I feel like I distinctly remember at least 5 times.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
And I remember one time with Rachel and Aaron.
Well, did we ever go when we lived in Phelan?
I couldn't tell you. I don't remember. Maybe?
I'm just thinking any time that we went, I might have been like too young to really imprint those kind of memories, except for that singular time, and then anything after that was going to San Diego or Vegas or Knott's Berry Farm.
Yeah. Like, I remember the feeling of going on certain rides and then remembering the rides from before. Like, I was fascinated with, I'm not sure all the names of the different parks, or not parks, but the different locations in the park. I remember being a little worrisome about Pirates of the Caribbean. I feel like there were some scary elements in there to me when I was a little kid, and it was very dark and you're going through the water and yeah. But I do also remember being ultra thrilled about going to either Adventureland or Frontierland. I think those two were the most exciting to me. I was really, really big into like the treehouse life or the,
That's what's so crazy about it, man. It's so fucking huge. So once you start walking, you're already lost.
Yeah.
It's bonkers how gigantic of a place this is.
And I forget how we even got on that subject, but what happened to the chili cook-off that it was so crazy?
I mean, there's just a lot of people. It was just nuts. I'm not a big fan of crowds.
So and the two kids wanting to go opposite directions didn't help.
Yeah, basically. And then, I mean, what's cool though was there was like a little stand where this guy had a couple of owls, and for
$20. I remember the picture.
Yeah, video. For $20 you can. I didn't realize at the time, but you can hold the owl. So I had no idea that that's what was going to happen. I thought I was just going to send the kids in and take a couple pictures and they'd be holding the owls and shit. And they're like, no, man, you're put on this glove. Surprised.
Owls coming onto your arm.
I was like, why the glove? Oh, shit. I'm not afraid of birds or anything, but I wasn't ready.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that part was, I mean, that was super cool. Lily had zero interest in it. Stanley was all about it.
Yeah, I was going to say, I didn't see Lily in the picture, so she was probably not interested.
She was only interested after we were done with it. She's like, well, I wanted to do it. And I was like, well, it's a little late for that. I'm not paying another $20. Like, you had your chance.
Yep, snooze you lose. Now we got to Photoshop a lightning bolt and some round glasses on Stanley.
Oh, yeah, he's going to Hogwarts next year. If that was a real thing, would you be okay sending your kids there?
No.
Because you know some sideways shit's going to pop off, but your kid could be a fucking wizard.
Didn't kids die there?
Kids could be wizards, bro.
Yeah, wizards until you're dead.
Yeah, I don't know how many kids died in Harry Potter.
Fucking Edward Cullen made it a whole episode.
I mean,
he didn't even make it through the whole movie. He died halfway through.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert.
Oops.
If you haven't seen it by now,
you're probably never going to watch it. Let's be real. Because if you want to start off now as an adult and try and get into Harry Potter, what so many people are obsessed with, and you start watching the very first movie, you're going to be bored out of your fucking mind. Because it's a slow burn on that one.
Honestly, I kind of liked it. I really liked the first one.
Really? I was bored out of my mind because first time I saw it, I was like 11.
The first three are a little kiddie.
Yeah.
But there's enough like fantasy and like immersion. It really kept me interested.
Yeah. I don't know. I was watching it at a friend's house because couldn't watch it at our own. And I was like, why is it all like, I don't know, like older movies are almost foggy to an extent.
Oh, yeah. Those had very, very poor production value. There's plenty of way older movies that have way clearer resolution than those did.
Exactly. And that's, I think that's what was kind of off-putting, because it's not as immersive when it's...
When it looks like it was filmed on a Kodak.
Yeah, exactly. Not trying to sound all like uppity here, but yeah, this is, I expected more, since all my friends were all about it, and I started watching it, and I was like, really? This? This is the hype? Okay. I'm pretty sure Star Wars from 1977 was way better than this, but whatever. It's cool.
About the same. About the same.
I don't know. I'm a hater.
I really liked it. I think it's like all the character development.
There is a lot of that.
It's a good coming of age story where he's like really trying to break out of his shell.
Well, yeah, I mean, you see these kids grow up, and like their personalities are changing as it goes, and how they interact with certain scenarios and how people act a certain way and how they respond to that specific interaction. Like, just, I mean, those movies lasted over the course of what, like 15 years?
Yeah, I mean, they're children at the beginning and adults at the end, so
like it's a long road, but yeah. I mean, as it progresses, I personally don't like the very first one. Just like, I'm not a big fan of Fellowship of the Ring.
That is a very long movie.
It is. And it's so fucking slow at the beginning, even though it, like, man, it needs is. To be. And I am a huge fan of Lord of the Rings, but the first one, bro, oh my God, I can't do it.
The whole Hobbiton scene sequence where Gandalf first gets to town and, you know, everything's mm-hmm. popping off in the little city and, you know, everyone's like, oh God. And, you know, the Gandalf the Grey is coming through, and you see him shooting off the fireworks, and everyone's all excited, and it's this jolly, joyous little town. And Bilbo's extremely upset the whole time. That was the most exciting part of that whole damn movie.
Yeah. And then
it was just this like laborious adventure for the rest of it. The other movies are cool because there's actually like fight scenes and shit.
Like, I mean, once whatever they get to, like where the elves live and everything, like they make it feel like this is the end of the movie. And then guess what? You have a whole another hour and a half to go. Let's go. It's like, holy shit.
Yeah, it's tough. Yeah. And it's like, it's tough to get other people interested in it. And then that's the first one that you have to show them. It's almost a little embarrassing. It's like, no, yeah, Lord of the Rings is fucking so cool. It's so good. You gotta watch it. Just bear with me on this first one, though.
Yep. I definitely feel that. I mean, same with TV shows nowadays, too. Like, no, man, it's cool. It's amazing. You just got to get past the first couple episodes. It's like, I don't really want to get into something that I'm gritting my teeth for the first few episodes of, like, oh, this sucks. So I can be like, oh, wow, this is mediocre.
You know how I feel about that. Yeah, I am not a fan of suffering through a season or suffering through the first five episodes, because it really does pick up. Like, it needs to be hitting from the beginning.
Yeah.
Like, I can give you one episode of, like, no one really knows the direction that this is about to go, but it's got to be at least intriguing enough.
Mm-hmm. Man, there is a lot of them out there, unfortunately.
And I'm sure there are so many of them that are really good once you get past all that. I just don't want to get past it. There was one show that I did suffer through the first, I want to say, six episodes, because just the rave reviews that this show got, Breaking Bad. And yeah, it was worth it. It was fucking worth it.
I still have yet to see a single episode.
Holy shit. Really?
I didn't. Yeah, man.
Breaking Bad?
I have zero interest in getting into that show.
Okay. All right. Now, we're literally going to roll back everything we just said. You've got to suffer through the first five or six episodes. And that show is absolutely incredible. I'm not lying to you. It is amazing. It is a great show. One of the best in Breaking Bad is edge of your seat from episode 5 through the end of the season, or through the end of
the series.
Like, it hits the entire time. There might have been like one or two filler episodes out of like 80, but the vast majority of it, it was an amazing show. And it ended appropriately. It did not, like, they didn't stretch it out too far, or, you know, get them into just these unnecessary, precarious situations. Like, it felt purposeful the entire time.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing that kills me about all those big name shows. Like, what's
Well, Sons did that a lot.
Yeah.
Sons was notorious for putting the tellers in these unnecessary situations. It's like, bro, use your head, man.
They're like, oh, let's come up with something else. The Irishman from the IRA fucking kidnap his kid and disappear for 6 months. Like, what? How the fuck did this turn of events happen?
There's another show, The Ozarks.
Mm.
Amazing show. But it definitely is doing that.
Ugh.
It goes from the cartel to a different cartel to locals, and then there's the KC mafia, and then it was just like one after another, and it was like, okay, we're getting a little deep here, guys.
I mean, yeah, that's how Weeds was.
Oh yeah, Weeds fell off really fast. That was like season 3. Weeds was just like, okay, so this is just never gonna end.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny how all these shows are about drugs.
Yeah. What's that older style show? I think it's based in like New York or Boston or something like that. And Peaky Blinders.
Oh, with Scarecrow from The Dark Knight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Cillian Murphy.
Yeah,
I mean, fantastic actor.
Oh yeah,
like I love his character, everything else, but that show is doing it nonstop. And it's like right at the end of a season, they're like, how are we going to fuck ourselves for the next one? I'm going to go piss off these people. And even his buddies are like, wait, what? Why? Why are we doing this? And then it cuts.
Mm.
And then you have to start the next season. And now you're dealing with whatever new crazy ass situation that they just got themselves into. And it's like, what the fuck? Why? So, yeah, after like 2.5 seasons of that, I was like, and I'm done. I can't keep beating the dead horse on that one.
Yeah, I heard that one went down in flames in the worst way.
That really sucks, because it starts off so fucking good. Like the very first episode, you're like, all right, I'm in, and then everything gets resolved, everyone's happy, everything's good, and then, oh, let's go fuck with these people, right back in the fucking hole. This is incredibly frustrating how so many shows are doing that, but I mean, they're getting paid, they're getting views, so some people out there are enjoying it, I guess.
Are there any good shows about cooking? I know that's kind of a dumb question, because there's an entire Food Network, but I mean, like a drama?
I mean, I just Googled some, and I've never heard of a single one.
I feel like that's an underutilized show idea. There's some great cooking movies,
mm-hmm.
but I can't think of any that are like a drama based on a group of people that work in a restaurant.
The only one that's popping out to me is called How Are You Bread? Because I've seen multiple clips. I mean, just based on like these little GIFs that are being played. I've seen multiple clips on like TikTok or Facebook or whatever. And it's like the two, it doesn't say what country they're from, but it's two Asian chefs that are going head to head on how fast they can chop up a salmon. And they're like in the middle of the street and there's a giant crowd around them.
Mm.
But that's the only one that I've seen clips of. It seems like they're all Asian based. I don't see any like Americanized ones.
These are food dramas, not just straight up cooking shows.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, being one of the top 10 dramas of all time, this drama introduced Korean traditional gastronomy in all its shapes and forms.
Oh.
Well, that's another one called Jewel in the Palace. There's no TV shows that are about the primary premise is cooking outside of like cooking shows. like Master Chef or Bizarre Foods, Iron Chef, Nailed It, Diners, Drives, and Dives.
Yeah, I'm tired of all those.
I want some more to it.
Half that, I feel like, is just acted anyway. But, like, I want to see something like a real show about people cooking. I think that would be way more fascinating.
Yeah, like, if they made, whatever it's called, Meryl Streep is one of, like, the big actresses in it. And this girl is trying to make every single recipe that Meryl Streep's character, Julia. Yeah, like, if they made that into a TV show, that would be fucking amazing.
I was actually kind of hoping for something a little more modern. I know that that kind of bounces back and forth between flashbacks of Julia Child and then current day Julie, who's like trying to relive the past.
Yeah, I'm just saying, like, that style where she started from like scratch and worked her way all the way through this recipe and everything that she learned, like, that kind of storyline is what I'm looking for in a TV show.
I think I'm looking more for stylized, like, have you ever seen the show Girls?
Mm-hmm.
Something a little more like that. I want to say it's New York, and it's a group of friends who have a bunch of commingling storylines that cross each other, and they're all trying to grow up and find themselves, but if you mix it in that half of them work in a restaurant, I think that would be very cool.
Gotcha. And actually, there is a show about cooking and food and culinary to its extremes that's a drama / comedy. It's called Food Wars, but I would not recommend it to majority of people because, one, it's an anime, and two,
anime.
Hey man, they got some good shit out there.
Yeah, I know. You've been talking about Food Wars. And I have yet to watch it.
That's definitely one of those shows that you just kind of got to look past certain aspects of it because it's a little extreme. But when they like really get down to it, like they're like breaking down all of the different levels of flavor in it and the different aspects of each individual piece to every plate that they make and how much effort and stress and everything else that's going into this thing. And then they serve it to the judge or one of their friends, like, hey, try this out. How is this? Blah, 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 blah. And then they give them feedback, or then it goes to like the extreme and they take one bite and their fucking shirt explodes and blows off. And they're like, oh, this is amazing. Like, it's like, all right, calm down.
Wow.
Yeah. Like, there's.
Yeah, that sounds wild.
It's fucking crazy, but it's amazing. Like, you just, it's just one of those things you just kind of gotta look past the stereotypical anime aspect of it.
Well, as long as I don't have to suffer through the first 5 episodes, I'll probably check it out.
Oh, there's no suffering. None whatsoever. It hits the ground sprinting. Like, it's a great show.
On the same topic of cooking in cinema, have you seen Burnt?
I knew that you were gonna say that one. Yes,
I know that one gets a lot of hate.
And there's maybe 5 minutes of that movie that I would just kind of take out because it's just a little dragging on, but that is it. The rest of the movie, fantastic.
Oh yeah. Now I know they kind of stylize the main character after a lot of Gordon Ramsay mannerisms without being so blatantly British, we'll say.
Mm-hmm.
But obviously he's a very type A angry dude, but the cooking scenes in that movie are just gorgeous. I've seen some pretty bad reviews on it saying that they were focused so much on this drama rather than the actual food. I would honestly argue it's the opposite. It's maybe not as much about the food as it is about the passion behind cooking.
Yeah, I mean, like, Chef did the same thing.
Yeah.
Like, there was so much focus on doing everything in their power to ensure that it's the food itself that is the focus.
And I love that movie, by the way.
But what he was getting pissed off the entire time was that the restaurant he was working at wasn't making it about the food.
Yeah.
They were just trying to make profits and didn't want to change the menu and wanted everything exactly how it's been forever, because if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Why not make it better? We're not trying to fix anything. We're just trying to adjust and tweak and bring more life out of it.
Yeah, Chef to me is a beautiful example about if you're not happy where you work, go work somewhere else. Because you're more important. And that dude was extremely passionate about food, and he was working in a place that did not align with his values about food. And he had to just like pull the plug and find himself and realize that like his passions were in a place that weren't respecting him.
Yeah.
And as soon as he was doing something which, like, if you compare the dishes that he was making at that restaurant to the things that he was making on his food truck at the end, his whole outlook on everything changed. He was making lesser food, so to speak, with gigantic air quotes. But he was so much happier with the control he had over it. And it was food he was passionate about. And it spoke to him and his culture. And it gave him an opportunity to bond with his son. And he did end up finding himself, obviously. And yeah, that was a great movie. Just on the aspect of being stressed out in a workplace is not worth it. Even if you're doing something that you think you believe in and you're supposed to do.
Yeah, I mean, people get stuck in their ruts and they have no idea how to get out of it.
Yeah, he was in a toxic work environment and he felt trapped.
And you can taste the difference between a plate that you are just doing run-of-the-mill, like, all right, I clock in, I made this, I clock out.
Yeah.
And then day in and day out, over and over and over. But when you, like, put everything you have into a plate, like, even in food that I've made here at home, if it's just, all right, I'm just going to make this for the kids and call it a fucking night, you know?
Yeah.
Versus, I've never made this before, I want it to be amazing, and even if I do, like, fall short of the mark that I've put out there for myself, because no one's a bigger critic than us, when it comes to our cooking or baking or whatever, it's still, you know, borderline phenomenal because of how much effort and meticulousness we've dedicated to that specific entree.
I like how you say we, because, you know, I think the same way.
Well, yeah.
This is gonna sound corny as hell. I'm gonna say it anyway. Love is a flavor.
Yeah.
And you can put that into food.
It's funny that you're saying this is corny, because I was trying to figure out how to word it right before I said what I just said about how, like, people will ask, like, oh, what's your secret ingredient? And someone will whisper, oh, it's love.
It's love.
Yeah. But I mean, it's a legitimate thing.
Oh, yeah. You goddamn right it is.
Because if your heart's not in it, that entire fucking meal is just going to fall short. There's so many times I'm just, like, pissed off at the end of making something because things aren't going the right way that I'm trying to do it, or I'm not focused on it, or something else is going on at the same time, and I'm just like, it's all just trash. It's all falling apart. I can't do it.
Yeah, love is an ingredient I try to add in everything I cook.
Yeah.
Even when it's a PB&J.
I just wish I had the opportunity to really explore and broaden my horizons with cooking when I have two incredibly picky eaters sitting with me at dinner every night. It makes it very difficult to want to broaden when you make all this food and you've been sweating and putting everything you have into it for the past, like, 2-3 hours, and then their immediate response is, ew, I don't like it.
Mm-hmm.
You're like, well, I'm fucking done here.
I'm sure that is extremely disheartening. It discourages you, I'm sure.
Yeah. It just sucks the life out of it. So, I mean, maybe when they're older, I can really get into it. Or if they're at someone else's house, or maybe I'll just start, you know, having the wife make their food so I can focus on our food. I don't know. I gotta find a loophole there.
Well, something that I was kind of thinking about was, now, obviously, you and I both are in love with cooking, right?
Yeah.
And I don't know if I always was when I was younger. I feel like I remember pretty distinctly that I was into cooking and making food for myself, and I always liked what Dad cooked. Obviously, I was pretty picky too, though. But I think there are plenty of food memories that I got from childhood that stick with me today. I mean, some of my most vivid memories are related to food. And I think your kids are making those memories as you go, but they don't think the same way adults do. So they're not formulating those thoughts and explaining them to you as it happens. Like, hey, Dad, this is going to be a lasting memory, how you made the eggs today. Like, I think about that all the time. Now, I didn't think about it then.
Yeah, that's a big no.
One of my first lessons in a kitchen was, don't crowd the chef. I remember when Dad turned around, he was making scrambled eggs. He turns around with the hot fry pan straight into my eye, burned the shit out of my upper cheek. I'll never forget that. I might have been 6.
Oh, okay.
I remember the way the kitchen looked. I remember the sound of the pan as it, you know, hearing the sizzle as he turned around. I remember all of it. It's an extremely vivid memory, not just because I got hit in the face with a frying pan that was extremely hot, but, you know, that was one of my earliest food memories. I have a lot of memories of getting hurt with food. I have a lot of scars from getting hurt with food. I have a big ass scar on my right leg from it was my 4th birthday. Dad had just barbecued a whole bunch of burgers and he's bringing in the plate and he set it on the counter, but it was kind of hanging off the edge a little bit. And I even remember my stance. I was standing on one leg, leaning on the trash can that was kind of under the counter. And I had my right foot like on top of my left foot, like with my toes kind of curled up, you know what I'm trying to describe.
Yeah.
And I turned around and yanked the plate off the counter and it shatters on the ground. All the burgers go everywhere and a piece of the plate went straight into my leg and I was like bleeding everywhere. Dad was definitely pissed. But then also it was like he was more worried about my leg than him being pissed. But he was definitely upset.
Yeah.
Because my fucking dumbass decides to stand there on one leg right next to the plate of food and yank it off the counter like an idiot.
Starting to see why I was the favorite.
Yeah, I was pretty clumsy. Granted, that's what happens when you're 6 feet tall at 7 years old.
Well, yeah, it's kind of crazy how there's so many different things they would cook that I've put into my own way of cooking when I first started living on my own and everything. Like, I mean, with the eggs, like it had to be fat-free milk that you put in with it, salt and pepper, nothing extra, and that's it.
Oh, yeah, I don't make eggs like that at all.
Well, I mean, I don't do it like that anymore.
I remember when I used to put milk in eggs because that's how I was taught when I was a kid.
Yeah, exactly. And first time I bought some mahi-mahi to make on my own barbecue, searched in like 5 or 6 different stores trying to find, it's like a metal, giant metal clasp.
Oh, yeah. It's like the grill basket.
Yeah, exactly. And I was like, I have to have this because that's how you cook fish. There is no other way to do it. You can't cook it on or in a pan or, well, now I cook fish in a fucking air fryer because in 12 minutes, my fish is perfect. Like, you know, there's so many little things over the years of like, this is how it has to be done.
Yeah, we didn't have air fryers back then. We had crock pots.
I was going to say the Mexican casserole that I hit you up about. I was like, hey, man, how do I make this gourmet? And you're like, you don't. You pick a different recipe.
I did say that. And what's funny is I was waiting for you to ask me right now, not knowing you were about to say this. And I was going to say, yeah, I wouldn't make that.
I mean, don't get me wrong. There's a couple crock pot recipes that I will still do.
Killing me, Smalls. Bro.
I mean, for one, it's super simple. You don't have to fucking worry about it. You start it in the morning, and then when it's dinner time, you worry about sides, and then that's it. But the most that we'll do with that, just like some chicken breast, a little bit of seasoning, and I think it's like a jar of salsa. Just throw that shit in there, and once it's done, you shred it all up, and it's this perfect, juicy, flavorful chicken that you throw in a fucking burrito or taco, however you want to do it.
That is the whitest TikTok bullshit I've ever heard you say.
Hey, I didn't throw in a whole stick of cream cheese. Right? That's the TikTok way.
The TikTok way. Yeah.
Have you seen that dude who duets different TikToks? And he's like, I'm going to end this TikTok as soon as they add in cream cheese. And they're like, oh, this recipe, throw in some of this, throw in some of this, and then the cream cheese, and then it just ends.
I'll have to find that.
That shit is so funny. Because every single one, man, like, calm down. Cream cheese is not that good where you need it in every single dish, bro.
No.
Like, it goes on a bagel, or that's about it.
I was going to say, I always put it on a bagel.
Yeah.
I do like it on a bagel, and I make my own, sometimes a store-bought cool because it's done for you, but I have made kind of like a compound butter, but compound cream cheese.
Yeah.
Or I'll dice up some jalapenos, add a few seasonings, a little paprika, salt, pepper, etc., etc., and make my own little spread. That shit's great on a toasted everything bagel. Oh man, but I digress.
Yeah, and the other one is carnitas.
Here we go.
Okay, this was before I was familiar with...
Just call it a pressure cooker. That's the current day acceptable version of a crock pot.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not a big fan of pressure cookers.
Pressure cooker, there's a little more science involved than just a hot ceramic bowl that sits there stewing some shit for 8 hours straight.
Well, I mean, yeah, like you prepare it the same way, you marinate it for however long, then you throw it in, you cook it, you pull it out, you throw it on a baking sheet, you throw it in the oven, crisp it up under a broiler, pop it out, and it's perfect.
Oh, I believe you.
The other way that I would do it now that I have all of the extra fancy shit would be sous vide.
Yeah.
You can still fuck up sous vide, just like you can still fuck up smoking stuff.
But oh, yeah.
Sous vide is... It's on another level.
That was actually what Burnt was so focused on.
Avoiding?
Yeah. The main character was like, this is the death of the pan, really.
Yeah.
This is the death of cooking.
Yeah, because that was his competition, right?
Yeah. It's all become a fucking science project. Well, his competition really was in a league of its own. It shouldn't have even been his competition, but the reason it was because they both worked under the same chef at a different Michelin star restaurant way back in the day. And, you know, this guy that did the sous vide, his restaurant was based on molecular gastronomy, which is a totally different cooking style than the French culinary style that the main character focused on, which is sauces, Maillard reactions, and, you know, French culinary style, traditional French cordon bleu cooking.
Yeah.
So he shouldn't have been so upset by the molecular gastronomy guy because they're doing different shit. You wouldn't go to either one of those restaurants and be like, oh, this one's better, because they do completely different things. So I guess right now I'm kind of uncovering a severe plot hole, but most people aren't that heavy into cooking, so they might not know.
Well, I mean, it's also the human nature aspect of it, because like even where I work, like I'm trying my best to race people filling up my boxes with whatever orders, and I'm trying to make sure that no one passes me, or I'm not like getting stuck behind someone else or whatever, even though they have completely different orders. There's absolutely no way that I can actually make this a race. I can't like in my head say I'm going to beat this person when they could have 4 items that they need to fill and I have 250. But at the same time, I'm still trying to beat that person just because I have that
competitive.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, that's where that human aspect comes from within that movie.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, it is completely different, but he has to be on top.
I think it was his primary concern was that the other chef had already gotten his 3rd Michelin star,
mm-hmm.
and he hadn't yet.
Yeah.
But they didn't make that clear enough that that was his true frustration. He had too many frustrations, and one of them was unnecessary, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. I mean, we both have an end goal. We're just taking completely different paths, and I have to make sure that my path is the one that's going to stand out better than yours.
Right. Great movie. Anyway, definitely. I forgot what we were even talking about now.
What was the Italian one with the two brothers?
Oh, that's a great movie. Low-key, that's an amazing movie. It is called Big Night.
Big Night. There we go.
Big Night. That is an amazing food movie. And it really tells a story about the food more than it tells a story about the guys.
Yeah.
That movie cared about the food. And Burnt, I think, cared a little bit less about the food and more about the lifestyle.
Mm-hmm.
And then Chef is kind of in the middle, where it cared a lot about the food, but it also cared a lot about the person.
Yeah, man, I feel like those three, four-ish movies are pretty much like the big ones. I mean, there's a few other in between, but eh.
Yeah, Big Night, Chef, Burnt, Ratatouille. Ratatouille is an incredible food movie.
I haven't watched the whole thing.
Oh, watch it start to finish. It's amazing. That's a movie that loves food more than Big Night did. Ratatouille is a love story to food, or a love letter to food.
Yeah, because like, oh, what the hell is the name of that dish with all the different squash sliced up so, like, perfectly and pristinely?
To an exact specification of 2 millimeters thick per slice?
Yeah, exactly. Sounds like you just quoted Burnt.
Well, that was a different dish, but
But he was pissed off that he didn't use the mandolin that he gave him.
Yes. The mandolin is mandatory. Pun intended. I believe the word you're looking for in the Ratatouille movie is ratatouille.
Oh, that's literally the dish.
Yeah.
Okay. I thought that's what it was, but I could have swore a few months ago I'd like looked up that dish and had a different name. Maybe it was like their version or some shit. But yeah, like as soon as he takes a bite out of it, it just brings him back to his childhood of his mom making it for him and like everything else. Like that's...
Because he was the antagonist through the whole movie.
Yeah.
And then it was like he realized what this chef could do.
Mm-hmm. And that's exactly how I felt when I went to Hell's Kitchen and tried the Beef Wellington.
That's Gordon Ramsay's namesake, is the Beef Wellington. He's modernized it from the old way, but...
Yeah, like that specific dish, like after taking a bite of it, it felt that exact same way. Not that mom or dad ever made me Beef Wellington, but like everything else just went silent. It was just the peak of like this.
It transported you?
Yeah, this is what culinary is. This is what it means to have perfected a specific plate. And it like brought a legitimate tear to my eye because it was so incredible that I've never had an experience like that in my entire life of like, wow, this is the greatest thing I've ever tasted, literally ever. Like you felt all the different textures and you break down every single piece that's in it because it's so well put together.
Balanced.
Yeah. And there wasn't, you know, like a giant air bubble in between. I want to say the meat wrapped around the mushroom is prosciutto.
Yeah, that or like a Palmer ham.
Yeah, like it was all just perfect. And yeah, like when they brought it out, they're like, oh yeah, you guys got the really good one. This one was the like perfect medium rare, this, that, and the third, and like hyping me up. I was like, oh yeah, sure, I'm sure you tell that to like everybody.
I'm sure it's pretty hard to judge.
Well, they serve it to you cut open. Yeah, so it's halved.
Ah.
But yeah, it was absolutely incredible. I mean, plus we were there opening weekend, so we got it half off, so that made it even better. But I would 100% pay full price for that. It was amazing. Although I'm sure if I ever go again, it's going to be a different chef. It's going to be put together differently. Something's going to be wrong, and it's not going to be exactly how I remember it, because that shit happens all the time.
I honestly would recommend to you, don't go get it again.
Yeah, because it'll probably kill the magic.
Yeah, don't ruin it for yourself. Live on that one moment of having a perfect dish.
Mm-hmm.
And don't chase that. So I think I remember what we were talking about earlier, which was kids forming their earliest memories. What is your first memory of food? Like, do you have any standout moments? I remember getting hurt a lot with food. I think one of my earliest memories of food would honestly have to be Dad teaching us how to make scrambled eggs.
See, I don't remember him ever teaching me how to make scrambled eggs.
Yeah, I distinctly remember him showing me how to do the low and slow method, where you like slowly drag the spatula through it and you slowly fold it over until it's all fully cooked all the way through. Like, I don't make eggs like that anymore, but I do remember that was one of my earlier memories of food. Another one would be also eggs. The first recipe I ever learned and then took home and made it myself was Grandma Jean teaching me how to make deviled eggs.
Mm.
That was so important to me when she taught me that. And it was probably for either Christmas or Thanksgiving or one of the holidays that we were over there. Or it could have been during one of the summers that we stayed there. I remember her showing me how to cook the egg, scrape out the insides, mix it with mayo, and putting all the eggs on a like a baking sheet, and then putting all the yolk filling with the mixture into like a piping bag, and then squeezing it into each of the eggs, and then sprinkling some paprika on top.
I think I was just too much of a crackhead as a child to get like the one-on-one, hey, this is how you do A, B, and C. Like, I learned everything visually.
Yeah, I was fascinated by the process.
Yeah, I've always been able to watch someone do something and then like replicate it by about 95%.
Which is funny that you say that, because when it comes to cooking, you're such a recipe guy.
Well, I'm also, that's where I'm a perfectionist. There's like 9 billion other things that I do on a day-to-day basis where I'm just like, meh, fuck it. But when it comes to cooking and I'm trying to replicate how someone does it, like I want to taste how they made it, because I see it and I'm like, ooh, that looks really good. And I don't want to immediately give it my own twist. So the first time that I do it, yeah, absolutely all about the recipe. But also, my initial passion was baking. And if you fuck up the recipe on baking, you're done for. Unless you're like adding like a chocolate drizzle or cinnamon or, you know, just like some other basics into the mix. But for the most part, when it comes to baking, like it has to be precise.
Which is exactly why I don't bake.
And like recipes that have grams instead of cups, that's when you know that they put their heart and soul into it, because grams are way more precise than a quarter cup and a teaspoon or a dash or a pinch or whatever. Like, if you're weighing each individual ingredient, I mean, it takes a lot more. And twice the amount of time, because you're weighing it and resetting your scale to whatever bowl or cup that specific ingredient is in. There's so much more to it. But those recipes come out 10 times better than the Americanized just, oh, it's a cup of this or a tablespoon of that, and then we're done.
Yeah, I've always been so bad at following recipes. And I swear I'll look at a recipe, start the process, then immediately have to look right back at it. Like, what did that say? Hate it. That's why I don't bake.
Yeah, it's a lot. For earliest food memories, I would have to say, like, the very first dish that I ever made for mom and dad, which I was extremely excited about, was, at the end of the day, a meat sauce. And I served it to him as such. There were no noodles. There was no nothing to put with it. I was just extremely excited that they even allowed me to cook anything. I think I was like 13 or 14 when I made it for them. And that's literally it. That was my very first dish that I ever made, outside of like a sandwich.
My man made marinara with ground beef.
Yep. And like, I don't remember seasoning the meat or anything.
I'm sure it was so plain.
I cooked up some fucking ground beef, threw it in some sauce, and called it a day. There was no simmering. There was no blending of flavors. Nothing, bro.
But look where you are now.
Oh, yeah. I mean, huge difference.
That's a pretty funny thing to have made and be super proud of.
I mean, yeah, like that's what kicked it off for me. And I remember them being so confused as to like where the rest of the food was.
One of the other things that I was really excited about making all the time was cinnamon toast. I thought I was very good at making that.
I mean, cinnamon toast is a little bit more complex than people think. Let's be real.
I mean, it's just toast with butter. And then you sprinkle some sugar and cinnamon on top.
What?
Well, I'm not sure what kind of cinnamon toast you be making.
Oh, bro. I had in my head French toast.
Oh, yeah. French toast is complicated.
I was like, where the fuck is the egg? Like, what are you doing? Yeah, no. Cinnamon toast? Absolutely. I still make that shit to this day.
If you had said, where's the egg, after I had described making cinnamon toast, I would have been like, wow, what are we talking about here?
Not the same thing.
Yeah, not at all the same
thing. Cinnamon toast, absolutely.
And I was like, I don't think it's that complex. cinnamon toast, I was pretty proud of that, because there's multiple layers.
Yeah, there's so many different steps. I have to take it out of the toaster. I have to spread said butter and sprinkle cinnamon and sugar.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I was definitely on a different brain track for that one. That was funny.
At any rate, we've been yakking your ear off for quite a bit of time about all these different foods. Food culture, food movies, food shows that there aren't enough of and there should be. Go watch Chef.
All right, everybody.
Thanks for listening to episode 2. And we'll be talking at you next week. Or the week after.